This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm Michael Robert Kaditz. I'm here today with our special guest, Julian McGuire. You are a BC public school teacher. You co-founded BCTF Divest Now campaign. Julian, welcome, and I'd like to hear a little bit about your Divest Now campaign. Then we will talk about that and talk about the BC Teachers Pension Plan, and we're going to relate it to philosophy because I know there's going to be a lot of philosophical, probably ethical content in the effort that your group is making to, as I understand it, to try and pressure, to try and get the BC Teachers Union to invest ethically. So tell me a little bit about yourself and about that effort, Jillian.
Okay, so I guess I'll start off by saying that what we're looking at is the BCTF pensions. So the BCTF table officers don't have any direct influence over our pension investments. It's all through the public pensions, BCI. It's a crown corporation that invests for all the public pensions of British Columbia. And the teachers' pension plan is one of those. But what we have done in the last couple of years is pass motions at our AGM calling for our table officers to lobby for divestment from fossil fuels and weapons, to lobby the Teachers Pension Plan Board to change their statement of investment policies and procedures, which is the marching orders for BCI. And so far, they have pretty much ignored all of our polite requests and motions. So yeah, we're looking to try somehow to turn up the heat. Many parts of the world right now are either on fire or underwater. Children are suffering. The children of Palestine are being murdered in the thousands. Children in Palestine are being killed by the thousands by bombs and weapons that public pensions are paying for. You know, the heat domes across the world, you know, was it Saudi Arabia? People are on a pilgrimage, Mecca, and it's over 50 degrees, and hundreds of them are just dropping dead as they walk. Birds are falling out of the sky dead. Monkeys are falling out of the tree in Mexico City dead, howler monkeys. And, you know, there's no way that our provincial government should be taking a portion of teachers' pensions and teachers' salaries and nurses' salaries and municipal worker salaries through some kind of like veiled screen that they've created, this pension fund, and, you know, funding our own extinction. And, you know, the murder of thousands of children, it's just so incredibly morally wrong. So yeah, that's basically what the campaign is about getting some, you know, some real engagement from, our so-called leaders.
So Jillian, you, have talked about at least three different issues. There's, fossil fuels, global warming, there's, you say that people that are affected by or dying from heat stroke, right, in Saudi Arabia, that's been in the news. I think you mentioned that. There's weapons of mass destruction. There's the war against the Gazans being perpetrated by Israel right now. So these are a lot of different issues. So I guess what I'm wondering is what is the responsibility of the is it the BC Teachers Union that makes decisions on where to invest, or tell me again who decides?
It's the Teachers Pension Plan Board.
Teachers Pension Plan. Okay,
they write the statement of investment policies and procedures, which directs BCI, which is the Crown umbrella company, on which ways to invest and which, you know, what our ethics are. And well, they say they can't invest based on ethics. They talk about a fiduciary duty. And it's really interesting when these pension boards talk about fiduciary duty, because they take it to mean financial duty, right? The best financial interest. But that's not actually what fiduciary means. Fiduciary means taking care of something for another person. So my interpretation of fiduciary is that they should be taking care of our future and taking care of our children's future, not just trying to, like, you know, get us a few extra bucks.
Okay, so you're saying that the BC Teachers Pension Plan, who sets what policy for BCI, who does the investment, is interpreting fiduciary duty as only what's financially most, they believe, most advantageous. And I would add, in the short term, right? Because certainly long term, effects of global warming aren't going to be financially.
Well, and there is some, there is a fair amount of evidence suggesting that they're not even investing in our financial best interests, because a study by Corporate Knights done a couple years ago suggested that if we would have divested from fossil fuels 10 years ago, our pensions would be worth $18,500 more per member. The only bump in fossil fuel prices comes when there's a war. That's temporary. And I think we can all agree that teachers do not want to be profiting off war. So we want our that portion of our salary. So for teachers, it's 11.13% of our salary. And then the employer kicks in another 11.3% or 11.4%. So for a teacher at the top of the scale, that's $22,000 every year going to this corporation that invests heavily in weapons and fossil fuels and big banks that fund fossil, like, that's just the fossil fuel industries that we're directly invested in. Like, we're invested in TC Energy, which is Coastal Gas Link, which is currently poisoning the Wet'suwet'en up in on Wet'suwet'en territory, and have, you know, sent in very violent RCMP CERG officers, had them, you know, arrested at gunpoint, you know, took an axe to their cabin door, and they've been treated with a huge amount of violence. And the BCI is a huge investor in TC Energy. I mean, it's just, it, teachers teach about reconciliation. We talk about Indigenous rights. We talk about the issues that are facing our Indigenous people, and at the same time we're handing over money to a corporation that's destroying their territory and criminalizing their land defenders, and it's just so incredibly wrong.
So I'm seeing a number of issues here that are worth discussing. One of them is, where is it determined, or who makes the decision? Is it by statute? Is it a policy? Where does this idea that the investment should be made according to fiduciary advantage, and then we can talk about the different interpretations of fiduciary, but where does that come from in the first place, rather than ethical?
Yeah, I mean, we all know that the system is rigged, right? And that so-called Canada, particularly so-called British Columbia, is an extractivist economy, what we've always done is displace Indigenous people who would be trying to protect the land in order to extract resources from their territory, These public pensions, in my opinion, have just become another way to subsidize this really horrible industry that, quite frankly, has had its day. You know, places around the world are electrifying at an astounding rate, and east of British Columbia, we're seeing more solar and wind. But you look around British Columbia, particularly in Vancouver, and you see like one windmill. that's never on. And you don't see any solar, you don't see any tidal, you don't see anything other than this doubling down of this sunset in the sunset industry. And I believe that British Columbia Investments was set up as a way to have forced investment in these extractivist industries.
Why can't ethical considerations be part of the decision-making process about where to invest? Why isn't that happening?
Well, I don't know. Probably because the oligarchs don't want that to be a consideration, because it's you know, I don't think individual teachers and their pensions are not going to profit from investing in this sunset industry. But CEOs of fossil fuel corporations and infrastructure corporations like SNC-Lavalin, you know, Trans Mountain Corporation, which we are invested in, all of those corporations have CEOs that make a lot of money, and it's another means of taking money out of, you know, hardworking people who are working for the city and for the province and teaching the children and doing our work in hospitals, taking a cut from their salaries and funneling it up to these psychopathic CEOs.
So as a teacher, pardon my ignorance here, but educate me and educate our listeners. As a teacher, do you have any choice at all in how your pension money is being invested?
We have no choice. And this is this is what is the most egregious, is that we are forced. If you are a public school teacher in British Columbia, if you are a nurse in British Columbia, this is it. Part of your pension automatically, part of your salary automatically gets deducted and handed over to this like evil empire that then hands it over to like Elbit Systems, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, who make like guns. And I believe a lot of like the police forces use guns made from Northrop Grumman. You know, it's like Chevron, Exxon, TC Energy, the Royal Bank, Scotiabank, you know, these really horrible corporations that have CEOs making millions of dollars a year.
So it must be sort of a helpless feeling, I'm guessing. If you're a teacher, that's your career, your life's work, your life's profession is invested in your teaching career, to be helpless when it comes to how your pension money, which is being deducted from your paycheck, where it's being invested. So it sounds like your conscience would say, or is saying, you don't want your money invested in these corporations, and you have no choice whatsoever. So how does that feel to be working every day, to be teaching children, especially when what you're teaching children is to be ethical, to be concerned about the climate, to be concerned about people that are victims of violence? How does it feel to know your money day to day is being invested in organizations, entities, corporations, and even in governments, right, that that behave, operate, promote behavior that's completely antithetical to your values? How does that feel to be helpless?
Yeah, it feels really shitty. But, you know, I've been teaching since about 1996. In the time that I've been teaching, I've seen an absolute war on education. You know, when I first started teaching, education was around 23% of the provincial budget, what they were going to spend. And now it's 9%, well, in British Columbia. You know, I've been watching as governments kind of pilfer money from children. And I'm not even going to get, well, maybe I'm going to get into the amount that's spent on management who have little to no contact with teachers and students that, you know, are in a building kind of downtown with, you know, I don't know, we don't even really know what the job descriptions of these management positions are. And as in almost ever, I'm hearing that's happening in the medical field as well, is just as management balloons, it comes right out of the classroom. So not only are we funded less, but management is also taking more. And so I've seen, you know, kids being increasingly used as resources to be mined, to profit off, to skim a little off. And so it's not surprising that the whole system is set up that way to skim, you know, to skim off the people who are teaching the children, to skim a little off. It's like just a little resource tax for everybody who works in the public sector. The Canadian Pension Plan is doing the same thing, right? So we're all actually paying into this directly, a portion of our salary. So it feels really shitty, but it's also empowering. Like, I really only discovered all of this, maybe 5 years ago, when the scientists announced that we only had 10 years left before, you know, complete and utter apocalypse. And, you know, I remember hearing that in the morning. So we go away with kids to Gambier Island. And it was the morning before I was going on this creative writing trip with kids. And I heard this on the radio. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So, like, then I went to school and with the kids. And I'm like, okay, everybody, like, we've heard this, right? And very few people really, you know, were outraged or willing to change all that much. So then I started connecting with activist communities. I started this band that I write mostly like climate and, you know, anti-capitalist, defunding the police types of themes. And I started hitting the streets and I got arrested with Extinction Rebellion. And then as my eyes started to open wider and I started to really look around at what was going on, then I found out, that was when I found out about my pensions. I didn't think that any leaders of children would be complicit in stealing children's futures. And it was amazing to me that it's gone on for so long. I mean, it's, you know, my bad for not looking into my pension. I just sort of trusted, I guess, that the people in charge of this had the kids' best interests at heart. Kim Benson, the other co-founder of BCTF Divest Now, I met her and we said, okay, well, we better do something about this. And then on October 7th, with the events of October 7th and then the subsequent slaughter of the Palestinian people, then we thought, oh, maybe we should look at weapons. And then we're like, holy shit, we're invested in like every weapons company that producing or facilitating all of these weapons being used on children and doctors and nurses and reporters. We've got a ton of money in there. So while it feels really shitty, it doesn't make me feel weak, because somebody has to stop this. Like, somebody has to put a stop to this. You know, if you go into a lot of teachers' rooms, a lot of them will have that poster that says, never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has, or something like that, that Margaret Mead quote. If you've seen that poster and you believe in it, then you have this moral imperative to act however you can in order to put a stop to this, what can only be described as evil. I don't know, do you know Hannah Arendt's philosophy, right? Because it's a philosophy talk, right? A philosophy show, right? And the Eichmann principle, right? The most evil in the world is done by people who are just doing their job. So at least a few people who I've met are doing the right thing, but most people, sorry to say, are just going along and doing their job and brushing this under the carpet. So I think, we have to expose the people who are making these decisions and put their faces out there in public and let everybody know, these are the people that are in charge, and these are the people who are being silent. While, you know, the first genocide that's not unfolding in real time is happening, right? Like, we know 10 years from now, it's going to be fucking awful. Some places, a lot of places in the world, it's fucking awful. And Vancouver has been pretty lucky this year. We've had a very rainy, cool springtime. but that's, you know, pretty localized to Vancouver, I'd say. A lot of places are just like underwater or on fire.
So there are a lot of people that don't agree with your positions on these various issues.
For example,
there's a lot of polarization around the Israel-Gaza issue. There's a lot of people who in Canada and elsewhere in the world who support Israel's position and deny that Israel is committing genocide and believe that Israel is acting in self-defense.
Yeah.
And
they, well, I think this, the last stats I've seen, it's becoming a lot less polarized, and more people now are on side with calling it a genocide.
Okay, well, let me make my point, because I'm not taking sides here. I'm trying to take a neutral position, and I want to make a philosophical point, right? So a logical point. Because it's a philosophy show, right? And I respect your views, but I don't want this just to be, you know, like one-sided. I want to you know, play devil's advocate and challenge you a little bit. So with respect to people who hold different views than yours, and I'm not saying that I'm taking sides one way or the other, but there are a substantial number of people in the world who support Israel's view and deny that there's genocide happening. There's also people who believe that weapons are necessary in order to protect democracy or defend values. My question is not who's right and who's wrong. My question is, if the teachers did have a say in how pension money is being invested, which you say they don't, but if they did, then how would it be determined where the money should be invested, given that there's differences of opinion? So I'm sure we can find teachers in Vancouver and British Columbia who don't hold your view that Israel is committing a genocide against Palestinians.
Okay.
So again, I'm not taking a position.
Okay,
how would it be decided? Who would decide?
Okay.
Who would decide?
So let's deal with that. Let's deal with that. I would be quite happy to debate anybody on that particular issue. And I'd like to talk a little bit about neutrality. When you're in a position where you're facing evil, neutrality makes you just as morally culpable, right? That's another one of the Eichmann principle, like that. It's kind of a corollary of the Eichmann principle, right? That when there is something going on that is so incredibly morally outrageous, we can't be neutral. And so when I do talk to teachers, and you know, perhaps soon after October 7th, I think there was a little bit of back and forth and debate and outrage and on both sides. But as time passes, and you know, every morning, Vancouver Co-op Radio plays Democracy Now! Every morning between 6 and 7. It's a radio show out of New York, and every morning they talk spend at least a portion of the time talking about Palestine, and they've been interviewing doctors in hospitals. You know, and then a few days, those same doctors will have been executed in their hospital. They're looking at children having limbs amputated without the use of anesthetic. I think that it's impossible to be neutral at that point. And once, you know, if you want to think about who gets to make the decisions, well, there would be a group of... See, I believe in citizens' assembly. So a citizens' assembly is when you take a random sample of the population, and let's say you have an issue to discuss. So let's say is it a genocide? So we think, okay, let's take a random selection, a random assortment of teachers chosen at random that would be demographically representative, and then you sit them in a room, and then they get experts coming in and talking, giving people the science, or you know, the what's going on. They're experts in the subject area, and then that group of teachers, or we're talking about a general citizens assembly, that group would then make recommendations. So I think it would be pretty easy to have that kind of a system around, do we invest in weapons? If you got a random selection of, let's say, 50 teachers from across the province, and you sat them down and talked about should teachers' pensions be invested in weapons, I'm pretty sure that, 99.9% of the time, that group, once they've heard from experts, would say, absolutely not. We do not want to be invested in weapons.
It's tempting at first. They say, well, ethics are relative because depending on what society you live in, on how you were brought up, what part of the world you live in, you're going to have different beliefs. And so it's all relativistic. One country, one society is right, could be another society is wrong.
Yeah, Nietzsche said a lot about that.
Well, the problem with that, and this is what the ethics professors will say, at the very beginning, is that's not a sustainable viewpoint, because that's not ethics. You're not doing ethics if you believe that right and wrong is simply relative. That's not ethics. That might be like an empirical observation about how the world is, that different people, different cultures have different beliefs about right and wrong. But ethics necessitates that there actually is objective right and wrong. There is right and there is wrong, and certain things are just right and certain things are just wrong. And ethics is about discovering right and wrong, and it's about finding, sifting through the relativistic views and finding out what's right and wrong. So just because one particular society might have certain practices doesn't make that practice right. It still might be wrong. Societies, people, governments, I think you should like this viewpoint, Jillian, have the capacity to do wrong. It's not a relative thing. I mean, killing without justification. Some people believe there is no justification. So that's an ethical question. Is killing right or wrong? And when is it justified or not? That is a debate, but there is an answer to that. It's just a question of discovering the answer and using arguments, right? Using arguments and logical arguments to try and discover what the answer is. So when it comes to ethical topics, what usually happens in a good ethics course is you will actually look at all the reasons pro and all the reasons con. All the reasons on one side, all the reasons on another side, maybe there's a third side. And you will weigh each of those reasons. And then as a group, we will come up with where is the strongest argument. Then we will infer from that that's what's morally correct to do in this situation. And it can be in healthcare, it can be in the justice system. There's all kinds of issues where an ethicist will try and discover where the weight of the evidence is.
It's the sort of a very cold, patriarchal kind of view of ethics, right? We've got the Kohlberg-Gilligan debate, right? Kohlberg talked about that, that's what you would do if you're at the highest level of morality. Yeah, you would sit down and dispassionately observe the facts. But then, Carol Gilligan came along and said, well, that's not how the female mind would do it, is that the highest level of morality from a feminine perspective would be nonviolence to self and others. So you'd be looking at if we were having that debate, you'd be looking at what is the most nonviolent to self and others solution to this problem. And I think from that perspective, you would have to conclude that investing in weapons is wrong. We're going to be talking about that. We have to talk about maybe patriarchal ethics as well, and not just look at that branch of ethics as particularly that's girls' ethics, right? Because I'm an athlete too, and I hated when they talk, oh, that's girls' sports, right? No, it's still sports.
In my ethics classes, we did exactly what I described. It was a very calculated, logical, dispassionate, unemotional weighing, right? Analysis of the pros and cons. But I actually did find some problem with that. So let's say the issue was in the justice system, let's say the issue was capital punishment, right? Should people be executed for crimes they commit? So in this class, which you might agree was a very male-oriented analysis, there was this cold calculation of the pros and cons. For example, is the death penalty actually decrease crime? Is the death penalty just? What about the problem of people who have been unjustly accused and it's not reversible, right, once you execute somebody? Those are kind
what
of cold calculations.
What about the trauma that's being inflicted on the people who are doing the killing, right? Imagine being the guy who has to push that button to execute people. You go to work and execute people. That's fucking awful.
Right, but that can still be part of the cold calculation. But I think what you're describing, and I felt this when I was in that class, for example, I just felt to hell with all these calculations. I just feel that it's wrong. It's violent and it's wrong. And on that basis alone, I have found my moral compass. My moral compass is not dependent on a weighted analysis of the pros and cons, and then we tally them all up and we see which one is stronger or not. My moral compass simply tells me that violence is wrong. And I think that's what you're describing. Do we agree here?
Yeah, of course, of course. And I think we also have to look at, so I think what you're talking about in terms of moral relativism, and I said Nietzsche, like, so when he talked about the fact that, like, show me one strongly held value in one society and I'll